Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, I'm Lynn, reading the Odessa American front page for Wednesday, January 15th, 2020. Commissioners table OT issue. Most county employees get comp time rather than overtime. IOA News at OAOA.com. Ector County commissioners discussed moving from comp time to overtime and extending raises to deputies doing courthouse security, but delayed taking action. The overtime to comp time item was brought forward by Maintenance Director Charles Pierce. Pierce said his department is in charge of all the buildings in the county and is on call 24 hours a day. Pierce said he is 4 employees short, and it's difficult to hire people on the comp time policy. He added that his employees spend a lot of time at the Ector County Detention Center and Youth Center. Human Resources Director Pat Patton said the comp time policy has been in place since 1984 or 1985. She added that the cemetery staff, for example, is so short right now that they can't let employees take comp time. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons said it would be a deviation from a long-standing policy to start paying overtime. He wanted to carry the item over to the next agenda and table it, which the other commissioners agreed to. Simmons said at some point the county may have to move away from the comp time policy. I'm sure it's been discussed from time to time. It really depends on when the oil field is booming and we're in competition with other businesses. It's harder to hire employees, and if they can go and earn and be paid for overtime elsewhere and also at a higher salary, that's much more attractive, but Patton said the court has to manage taxpayer dollars. Any employee who starts here signs that they understand that's the policy, Patton said. Sheriff Mike Griffiths said he didn't recall asking about raises for courthouse security who work under the sheriff's office. Griffiths said it covers 5 people who are all certified peace officers. And again, if we were to get a vacancy there, I may have a hard time filling it because those individuals didn't get that 10% raise that all the other individuals in the sheriff's office got last year, Griffiths said. I'll take the blame for it. I'm taking the blame that it was my oversight and we just didn't get it done, he added. On a separate item, commissioners approved the purchase of equipment for the jail expansion project, a budget amendment to the jail expansion fund, departmental furniture and equipment and office supplies for a total of $60,900. Lind said this includes items such as chairs, tables, and breathing apparatus for fire protection. Pierce said he is waiting for word from the state jail inspector on when the inspection will be, but expects it to be next week. Commissioners also heard a presentation from the public power pool, approved the appointment of Betty Walker, Joan Hurd, Selena Brito to the Ector County Child Services Board to serve a 2-year term beginning this month. Approved accepting a donation of $500 from Jesus Vela, doing business as Aloha Therapy for the Ector County Sheriff's Office. Approved 2020 seal coat projects. Approved bid specifications on liquid asphalt emulsion, asphalt patching material, graded base material, seal coat aggregate, water in Pit Run, Caliche. Approved a required resolution to apply for grant funds with the Permian Basin Regional Planning Commission for a regional solid waste grants program. Approved an agreement for continuing disclosure services by and between Ector County and HTS Continuing Disclosure Services, a division of Hilltop Securities, Inc., in regard to annual filing of continuing disclosure information. Approved accepting an award for the 2019 SCAAP State Criminal Alien Assistance Program grant for $15,513. Approved a request from the county attorney to hire an attorney at a Step 3 due to experience. Approved a request from the district attorney to hire an attorney at a Step 9 due to experience. Approved a repeat for Sierra Rica Springs being a plat of a 6.90-acre tract out of Section 17 and 18, Block 43, T-2-S, T&PRY County Survey. Approved a request to repeat Alexa Estates, the E/2 of Lot 1, Block 8, Pleasant Farm Subdivision. Approved action on a proposed Ector County MHRC development on 3 Logistics RV Park, 1760 North Farm to Market Road, 866. Approved a replat of Lot 4, Block 29, Pleasant Farm Subdivision, third filing. Approved a replat of East 348.88 of the West 554.88 feet of the South 632.50 feet of Lot 2, Block 8, Pleasant Farm Subdivision. Approved a line item transfer to Highways and Streets equipment rental for $18,000 from Highway and Streets road maintenance. Approved a budget amendment to the General Fund, County Court at Law Number 1, Departmental Furniture and Equipment from unreserved fund balance for $2,000. Approve the Accounts Payable Fund Requirements Report. There was no executive session. MyOAOA.com Ector County Commissioners Court TINYURL.com/UD74D92 AVID Leadership Coaching Widens Impact by Ruth Campbell, rcampbell@oaoa.com. Since its expansion to middle schools throughout the district, the AVID AVID Leadership Coaching Program has improved the climate across Ector County ISD. Twice a month, volunteers from a vast cross-section of professions across Odessa fan out to the middle schools to have conversations with 75 sixth graders at each of 6 middle schools. The program was piloted at Bonham Middle School last year. Amy Anderson, Director AVID for ECISD, said there are 25 to 35 coaches. On a recent Thursday at Ector College Prep Success Academy, there were 46 students and 17 coaches. The mission of AVID is to close the achievement gap by preparing all students for college readiness and success in a global society, its website said. Getting back into the routine at the first of the year is difficult for everyone. We break those habits and we lose momentum, so we'll get it back. The coaches really devote their time to one campus, and they do a great job. Life is busy, life is hectic, and everyone that's being a coach has an entire life. Family, jobs, everything that we all have. So they take an hour out of their day, about twice a month, and devote it to our students, Anderson said. The curriculum runs the gamut from making eye contact, learning to shake hands, and self-advocacy to setting goals, time management, test anxiety, and how to be a leader, among other things. Anderson said parents have asked if it's too late to get their parents into the program, and school officials have noticed a difference in how the students act. The spring ends with a celebration of a better me. Hector's students, Luis Soto Suarez, 12, Diana Enchondo, 11, and Destiny Little, 12, have all found things to take away from the program. I think it's cool, Soto Suarez said. It shows what you want to do. It shows you stuff you don't know. It teaches you how to think about your mind and stuff. He added that he had enjoyed meeting the different mentors. Enchondo and Little said it has helped them meet new people. Enchondo said you can ask the mentor questions, learn about their jobs and what they do in life. She added that you learn to socialize with people more as well. You get to meet new people, and that helps you make friends and collaborate with teachers, Enchondo said. Little said the program can help students get a better lifestyle and motivate them to do better things. It's really good, and all the people you meet, they're really nice, and they help you improve so much. That's why I really like it, Little said. She added that it helps motivate her and teaches you good things to do in school. Be nice to people and have good things to say, and not always the negative things. Assistant Principal Reagan Paquette said the first time the coaches came, there were a few behavior issues. And now it's like they'll do whatever they can to come here just to see their community mentors. They really enjoy it. I've seen a lot of improvement in their behavior during the day, even when their mentors aren't here. They incorporate what they learn into their day, Paquette said. She has also used some of the things the students learn in her job, such as shaking hands with students in the hallway. Principal Charles Quintella said he loves the coaching program because it's an investment from the community into the students, which is hugely important for the future of Odessa. To me, it's the biggest way we serve is through our kids, Quintella said. He added that the research shows if students have three healthy adults in their lives, other than their parents, it increases their chance for success by more than 80%. This is one more adult to maybe somebody that may not even have that adult. So we're already switching the odds on these kids, Quintella said. The adults show the students how to communicate in proper, formal ways. They also mentor the students and help build their self-esteem. Those things, to me, are things you can't put a price tag on. To me, it's hugely beneficial to kids that don't have this type of connection, Quintella said. Christy Latimer, Associate Professor 2 Education at Odessa College, said love of middle school students, her background as an assistant principal at Midland ISD, and love of community service drew her to the AVID coaching program. This is the best way, in my opinion, to serve the community, Latimer said. It's amazing, she said of the program. I really feel that the students benefit and they see that there's people invested in them. Kevin Badgett, Associate Professor of Educational Leadership at University of Texas Permian Basin, said Adrian Vega, Executive Director of Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, asked him to get involved. Badgett said he was glad to support the program. "I think it's a really interesting experience for kids," Badgett said. "I think it's great for them to have an opportunity to have conversations with people across different professions and aspects of the community and get new perspective. I think it opens their experience to different possibilities that they may not have been exposed to before." MyOAOA.com ECISD AVID TINYURL.com/RK6KDWX Meeting of Technology, Religious Text, Subject of Lecture. By Ruth Campbell, rcampbell@oaoa.com. Text and Technology. The impact of technological advancement of the production of religious texts will be presented by the Reverend Joe Weeks at 6:30 p.m. January 23rd at the Ellen Noel Art Museum. The event is free. Weeks is co-pastor of Connection Christian Church with his wife, the Reverend Dawn Weeks. Weeks' lecture is tied in with the museum's exhibit, Sacred Scripts, 1,000 Years of Religious Text, on display through February 23rd. Weeks will talk about how new technologies in the Western world impacted the production of religious texts and shaped the religious communities to which they belong. Weeks has a Ph.D. from Texas Christian University and has taught at the college and graduate level before returning to pastoring. "Every year, I go to the Society of Biblical Literature Annual Conference, which is the academic professional society for religious professors, basically including Bible professors. Every year or two, I present a paper," Weeks said. In the next month, he will have an article published, plus he is on the board of the museum. "During my studies, one interest I developed was the difference that technology developments make in how the religious communities receive and transmit and even think about their sacred texts. In the first century is when the New Testament was being written. Those letters and the Gospels were written in the first century and dipping into the second century," Weeks said. "That's around the time when the Codex was invented. Before that, they had papyrus and parchment to write on at that period. So it was either dried animal skin that they would develop into a scroll, or they would have certain kinds of reeds, and they would cross the fibers and make the predecessor to paper. But they were mostly made into scrolls, and that's how you read," he added. "If you think about the New Testament, each book was separate, but the Codex made it into more of one book." The main advancement, Weeks said, he will focus on is the invention of the printing press, which made the Bible available to the masses. "The mass production of religious text means it's economically possible for more common people to have access to reading, to looking at the text of the Bible. Before the printing press, that simply wasn't the case. The church as a whole, the people in the church, they never read out of the Bible. They didn't have access. We're not just talking about literacy rates. We're talking about economic access. And so today, for instance, in the church, we so take for granted, we say read your Bible every day or read your Bible every week. That would have been crazy talk 500 years ago," Weeks added. Electronic media is another development. Now people can search for references to water in the Bible, for example. That's a way of studying that wasn't possible before, so that kind of technological invention also transforms how you can think about how you study and read a religious text, and all along with that is what each of those technological changes does to the art form, Weeks said. These days, we don't think of authors as writing in longhand on paper or napkins. So previous to the changes in the last 500 to 600 years, it included the actual creation of a document. And for the community of faith, that included artwork on the document itself and manuscript art. That could be what you call a lost art because of the printing press, he said. Ashley Flores, Development and Marketing Manager at the museum, said Weeks is well known around the museum. He helps us out a lot at the museum, and we just appreciate him being able to share his knowledge with our community regarding religion and how it ties into our exhibition. It's awesome that we know him, Flores said. MyOAOA.com Ellen Noel Exhibitions, TINYURL.com/Y86PJ76W. Connection Christian Church, OdessaConnection.Church. Quick Hits from Staff Reports. Hope and Healing. The Basin Strong Hope and Healing fundraiser starts with a donor-sponsored black tie and boots benefit dinner at 5 p.m. Thursday with appetizers at Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street, followed by a Hope and Healing community concert featuring Rick Trevino and Clay Walker at La Hacienda Event Center, 12600 Texas 191 Midland. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. A portion of the proceeds from the dinner and concert will be donated to the Odessa Community Foundation's August 31st Fund, a 501c3 Odessa-based nonprofit formed by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce and benefiting the families of 7 deceased and 25 injured. For more information about the benefit dinner or to make a donation, email hope@basinstrong.com. Go online for tickets or sponsor tables. On the net, basinstrong.com. YPO Kickoff Mixer. The Young Professionals of Odessa has scheduled a kickoff mixer from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday at the Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard. Drinks and food will be available. The event is free and open to individuals ages 21 to 40 and who live and work in Odessa. On the net, ypodessa.org. Fundraiser. Birthright of Odessa will be celebrating its 35th anniversary with a special evening featuring Matthew West from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. January 23rd at MCM Grande Hotel in Fundome, 6201 East Business I-20. General admission is $50 and faith sponsorship is $500 for 4 tickets. For event co-sponsor or event underwriter information, call 228-3129. On the net, birthrightodessa.org or tinyur.com/WQQYCXD. UTPB partners with UT Health to expand MBA opportunities. OANews@OAOA.com. The University of Texas Permian Basin has announced a new partnership with the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston, UT Health School of Public Health. Together, the two UT system universities will offer students the opportunity to simultaneously earn a graduate certificate in public health while earning a Master of Business Administration. This partnership provides a pathway to earn two important credentials. Students will now be able to earn their MBA degree and a graduate-level public health certificate in 46 total credits. Previously, this path would have required students to earn their degree and certificate separately. This partnership will save students both time and money, UT Permian Basin Professor of Management William Fannin said in a news release. The need for healthcare professionals continues to grow in West Texas, the release said. UTPB President Sandra Woodley said in the release that this degree program will meet the needs of those looking for management-level positions in public health, healthcare organizations, and hospital administration. Students who graduate under this program will earn their MBA from UT Permian Basin and a graduate certificate in public health from UT Health School of Public Health. MyOAOA.com. On the net. TINYUR.com/T73932. P. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Elliptical safe for arthritis? Dear Dr. Roach, is an elliptical glider safe for a person with arthritic knees? Signed, N.M. Answer. Elliptical training machines have much less impact on the knees and therefore are a good choice for many people with painful osteoarthritis of the knees. However, the foot position needs to be properly fit, and some people can exacerbate back pain from these machines due to the twisting movement that is common when exercising. Still, I think it is a reasonable choice for a person with knee but no back problems. Swimming probably has the least potential for joint pain due to the buoyancy of the water and the minimal external forces on the joints. Swimmers get the benefit of joint movement, which tends to reduce pain from the osteophytes, bone spurs, in osteoarthritis. Strong muscles from any kind of repeated exercise also improve movement and balance. Higher impact exercises are better from the standpoint of strong bones in terms of their ability to reduce the risk of osteoporosis. There is always a trade-off of benefits in exercise and thus no one best exercise to recommend. My best advice is to do the exercise you enjoy that doesn't cause symptoms and that you will keep doing. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475. Local News Roundup. Man charged with choking, assaulting girlfriend. A 34-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly choked and threw his girlfriend to the ground. Alex Mendoza was charged with assault, family violence, impede breath, a third-degree felony. The reported assault happened at 12:25 a.m. Sunday in the 10,000 block of West Swan Road, an Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed. The complainant, identified as 28-year-old Miranda Berlin, reportedly told deputies that her boyfriend had assaulted her. Berlin detailed that during an argument about finances, Mendoza kicked the door open to the bedroom, which caused it to break. Berlin stated that she went inside the room to talk about the broken door, and that's when Mendoza grabbed her by the throat and threw her to the floor, the affidavit detailed. Berlin reportedly told deputies that while Mendoza had a hold of her neck, she was unable to breathe. Berlin detailed that Mendoza then threw her to the ground with enough force to cause her nose to bleed after hitting the floor. Deputies saw redness around Berlin's neck and around her eyes that were consistent with her being choked, the affidavit detailed. Deputies also saw Berlin with blood on her nose and a paper towel with blood on it. There was also a broken door to the bedroom. Mendoza was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $25,000 and posted bail as of Tuesday afternoon, jail records show. Teenager charged after he bragged about shooting. A teenager was arrested after he reportedly bragged about a shooting where two houses and vehicles were struck by bullets. Aiden Castaneda, 19, was charged with two counts of deadly conduct, discharging a firearm, a third-degree felony, and unlawfully carrying a weapon, a Class A misdemeanor. He has also been charged with going off bond for charges of theft of a firearm, state jail felony, possession of a controlled substance, state jail felony, delivery of marijuana, state jail felony, possession of marijuana, state jail felony. The reported shooting happened on November 21, 2019, in the 600 block of College Avenue, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. Two houses and vehicles were reportedly struck by bullets. The residences that were hit had a total of 16 occupants. Officers found 29 shell casings on the street from different caliber firearms, the affidavit stated. There were 19 casings that were common a caliber for AK-47s. During the investigation, a suspect was reportedly identified as Castaneda, as anonymous tip stated the 19-year-old bragged about doing the shooting in the 600 block of College Avenue. Officers executed a search warrant at Castaneda's residence, the affidavit stated. During the search, officers found ammunition and a Romanian mini Draco AK pistol. Test fires were reportedly conducted on the firearms seized from the search warrant. It was determined the test fire casing was consistent with the casing from the scene in the 600 block of College Avenue. Castaneda was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has seven bonds totaling $100,500 and was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon, jail records show. OA News at OAOA.com. Obituaries. Maria Luisa Garcia. Odessa, Texas. Maria Luisa Garcia, 75, of Odessa, passed away Monday, January 13, 2020, at Medical Center Hospital. She was born Wednesday, March 15, 1944, in Mexico, to the late Jesus and Manuela Calderon Espinoza. Those left to cherish her love and memory are her husband, Edmundo H. Garcia, daughters Nancy Renteria and husband Mario, and Sonia Duran and husband Renee, brothers Oscar, Baltazar, Abraham, Jesus Chuy, and Gonzalo Espinoza, 5 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces, nephews, cousin, extended family, and friends she considered family. She is preceded in death by her parents, Jesus and Manuela Espinoza, brother Israel Espinoza, uncle Miguel Gonzalez, aunt Prima Jimenez, nephew Edward Espinoza, cousin Estela Villa, grandmother Eustacia Flores, and uncle Pablo Flores. A rosary will be recited at 7 o'clock p.m. Thursday, January 16, 2020, at Acres West. Funeral services will be 10 o'clock a.m. Friday, January 17, 2020, at St. Anthony Catholic Church, with the interment to follow at the Rose Hill Gardens section of the Ector County Cemetery. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Deborah Lee Mossbarger, Odessa. Deborah Lee Snyder Mossbarger was born March 29, 1963, in Marysville, California, to Albert L. Snyder and Emily A. Snyder. Upon the death of her mother at a young age, she was adopted by Karen F. Knorr when she married Debbie's father. Debbie passed away Friday, January 10, 2020, in her home in Odessa, Texas. Debbie was married to the Reverend David J. Mossbarger. They had just celebrated 33 years of marriage. They had 3 children, Emily, Alice, and Aiden. She was preceded in death by her parents, brother Paul, and nephew Joseph Snyder. She is survived by her husband, children, and son-in-law, Chase Frost, her brother Philip Snyder, his wife Beverly, their daughter Elizabeth, along with her sister and her family. The memorial service for Debbie will be held at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church Friday, January 17, 2020, at 11 o'clock a.m. The Right Reverend J. Scott Mayer, Bishop of the Diocese Northwest Texas, will be the celebrant and preacher. James H. Glass, Morgan, Texas. James H. Glass, age 82, of Lakeside Village, passed away on Friday, January 10, 2020. James's celebration of life service will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Thursday, January 16, 2020, at Lawson Funeral Home, Meridian, Texas. Burial will be at the Copperell Cemetery. A visitation is scheduled from 6 o'clock p.m. until 8 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, January 15th, also at Lawson Funeral Home. James Henry Glass was born on June 5, 1937, in Lubbock, Texas, to Lee and Lucille Glass. Left to cherish his memory are children Kyle Wayne Glass of Longmont, Colorado, James Glass Green, and husband David of Greer, South Carolina, Vonnie Michelle Glass of Lakeside Village, and James Colby Glass and wife Janine of Newark, Texas. 3 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and numerous other relatives and friends. Jamie is preceded in death by his wife, LaWayne, his parents, Lee and Lucille Glass, his grandson, Christopher Glass, his siblings, Nita Webb, Lynn Glass, Naoma Boop, Herman Glass. Memorials can be made in James's name to Lakeside Village Area Fire Department, 115 County Road 1296, Morgan, Texas, 76671. Words of comfort and peace can be sent to the family at www.lawsonfuneralhome.net. Ronald Obert Scott, Odessa. Ronald Obert Scott, 69, went to be with our Lord on December 29, 2019. Ronnie was born in Odessa on May 16, 1950, to Wanda and O.V. Scott. Ronnie is preceded in death by his parents and brother, Donnie Scott. Ronnie is survived by his children, Felicity Fulford and Charity Jones, sisters Dina Scouten and Karen Steppen, seven grandchildren, two great-grandchildren, and his wife, Donna Scott. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Chaney May Mays, Odessa. Chaney May Mays left this world to go to heaven January 9, 2020. Chaney was born July 24, 1917, in Elmont, Texas, to Beatrice Washington and Sidney Bush. She was preceded in death by her parents and stepfather, Papa Jones, and husband, Jesse B. Mays. She moved to Odessa and married her husband in 1951. She leaves to cherish and honor her memory her stepdaughters, Jesse May Parker, Estella Lulu Murray of Belton, Texas, and the love of her life, her godchild, Ebony Godfrey of Dayton, Texas, and a host of cousins and friends. A visitation will be held at Frank Wilson Funeral Home of Odessa on Tuesday, January 14th from 4 to 9 p.m. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, January 15th at 1 p.m. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Please visit frankwwilson.com to leave online condolences. Death Notices. Jerry Edwards, Balmoray. Jerry Edwards, 62, of Balmoray, Texas, died Sunday, January 5th, 2020, in Balmoray. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. January 21, 2020 at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Kenneth Lee Howard, Odessa. Kenneth Lee Howard, 89, of Odessa, Texas, died Sunday, January 12, 2020 in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Juan Javier Espinoza, Jr., Midland. Juan Javier Espinoza, Jr., 30, of Midland, died Saturday, January 11, 2020, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 16, 2020, at Greenwood Baptist Church. Visitation will be held 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, January 15, 2020, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home of Midland. Mary Louise Fisher, Tomball. Mary Louise Fisher, 89, died Tuesday, January 14, 2020, in Houston. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Francis Sammy Henderson Goodwin, Odessa. Francis Sammy Henderson Goodwin, 86, of Odessa, died Thursday, January 9, 2020, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. on Friday, January 17, 2020, at Mission Dorado Baptist Church. Pastor Bob Bratcher is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Agapita Jimenez Hernandez, Odessa. Agapita Jimenez Hernandez, 93, of Odessa, died Monday, January 13, 2020, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Thursday, January 16, 2020, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Restorative sleep can improve overall health. By Dr. Padmaja Patel, Midland Health. It's time to think about New Year's resolutions. I want to suggest some simple lifestyle changes that you could consider when you make your list of resolutions. These changes could have a significant positive impact on your overall health and quality of life. When we talk about a healthy lifestyle, everyone generally focuses on nutrition and exercise. But there are other important pillars of lifestyle medicine that we should not overlook. All my life, I have been proud of being able to function with less sleep while waking up very early every morning. I consider sleeping to be a waste of time and preferred to do something more important and meaningful instead. But now my understanding on the importance of sleep has changed completely. In my lifestyle medicine journey, I have learned that sleep is one of the most important times of the day when your body and brain are busy restoring your health. Last year at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, Dr. Parham Dedhia's talk, Clinical and Lifestyle Medicine Prescriptions for Healthy Sleep, completely changed my perspective on sleep. In their book, The Alzheimer's Solution, Drs. Dean and Aisha Shirzai explain that sleep was designed especially for our brain. 7 to 8 hours of sleep was better than anything else to cleanse your brain of toxins, oxidative byproducts, and amyloid, which is responsible for causing Alzheimer's disease. In addition, a good night's sleep can remove negative thoughts and memories. Optimal sleep. Teenagers need 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night. Adults should get 7 to 9 hours. Older adults should get 7 to 8 hours. It is okay to take naps during the day to reach the goal. Naps should be part of a daily routine, be 30 minutes or less, and should not be too close to bedtime. Consequences of poor sleep. Heart disease, stroke, and early death. Increased hunger. A sleepy brain is a craving brain. Fewer growth hormones, less testosterone, and less repair proteins. ADD, ADHD symptoms. Inability to prioritize. Poor attentiveness. Clumsiness, overconfidence, inability to deal with complicated new problems, inability to judge impairment in risk-taking behavior. Restorative sleep can restore energy, enhance brain's neuroplasticity, protect from heart disease, reduce inflammatory markers, improve overall health, leading to less spent on health care, improve mood, insight, social engagement, and quality of life, improve the way we perceive and process information, aid with short-term and long-term memory, processing speed, recall, driving skills, and athletic skills. Reduce cravings for high-fat foods and sweets. Reduce migraines and tension headaches. Reduce risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Reduce the risk of stroke. Increase libido and testosterone levels. And reduce brain shrinkage. Sleep deprivation. It has been proven that when someone sleeps only 4 hours each night for 2 weeks, that individual makes the same level of mistakes as someone who has not slept for 2 consecutive days. The CDC describes it aptly on its website. Drowsy driving is similar to drunk driving. Being awake for at least 18 hours is the same as someone having a blood content, BAC, of 0.05%. Being awake for at least 24 hours is equal to having a blood alcohol content of 0.10%. This is higher than the legal limit, 0.08% BAC in all states. Additionally, drowsiness increases the effect of even low amounts of alcohol. With so many traffic accidents and traffic-related deaths in our community, it is imperative that the employers take this information seriously. Myths about sleep. As you get older, you sleep less. Elderly people need as much sleep as other adults. I can sleep less during the week and make up for it over the weekends. It does not have the same benefit as getting quality sleep all week long. Skipping an hour or two of sleep will not hurt me. Skipping sleep affects memory and mood. Tips for better sleep. Good sleep habits, sometimes referred to as sleep hygiene, can help you get a good night's sleep. Go to bed at the same time each night and get up at the same time each morning, including on the weekends. Make sure your bedroom is quiet, dark, relaxing, and at a comfortable temperature. Remove electronic devices such as TVs, computers, and smartphones from the bedroom. Avoid large meals, caffeine, and alcohol before bedtime. Get some exercise. Being physically active during the day can help you fall asleep more easily at night. I hope you will give this simple suggestion serious consideration and be intentional about getting more restorative sleep every night to improve your overall health. Dr. Padmaja Patel is Medical Director of the Lifestyle Medicine Center. Newlyweds can create their own holiday traditions. By Alyssa Winterlind, Sinners. Family traditions are created throughout our life and help establish expectations for family gatherings, holidays, or other special events. When we enter adulthood, we begin to establish our own family traditions. Perhaps for birthdays, your parents threw a big party each year. As an adult, you may still hope for this. Or you may change your tradition for a birthday dinner with a small group. Maybe a family tradition at Thanksgiving was having a traditional Thanksgiving meal surrounded by your extended family. Maybe your family spent Christmas talking and playing, having hot chocolate, reading the Christmas story, or going to see Christmas lights. Each of these traditions go with you as you enter into new chapters of your life. Newly married couples bring family traditions and individual perspectives into the unique environment of marriage. Setting new traditions like those mentioned above can cause some conflict when both people feel strongly about their own traditions of the past. When it comes to holiday traditions, this becomes even more evident. One person may want to decorate for holidays, while the other just wants lights on the house. One person may want to invite all of the extended family over for a holiday meal, while the other may want a small family gathering. Establishing traditions as a new couple means finding a blend of old and new traditions. It means putting aside the notion that your way is the right one and working together to create something new. One way to begin creating new traditions is to speak openly with one another about what you would like to do over the holidays. When my husband and I got married, we shared similar ideas about the holidays, but we differed in one thing. I like to put the Christmas tree up as soon as Halloween is over. For me, a Christmas tree represents the beginning of a beautiful and wonderful season. Early on, my husband and I discussed this and have found a happy medium of waiting until November begins to decorate for Christmas. So how can you make your own holiday traditions? First, make a list of all ideas and do not use mean or unkind words when a suggestion is made. Once your list is complete, choose the top three things you want to have as a tradition and have your spouse do the same. Discuss your three choices and why they are important to you. Again, when sharing ideas or opinions, do not put down each other's ideas. After discussing your thoughts, write out ideas that would allow these traditions to be accomplished. For example, if having a fire in the fireplace is essential for the holidays, you want to gather firewood and clean out the chimney. Lastly, make a commitment that you will both put forth effort in creating this new tradition in your family. TTUHSC opens clinic to treat opioid addiction. The clinic at Texas Tech Physicians of the Permian Basin facility offers Suboxone therapy. By Brandy Addison. brandyaddison@heartnp.com. The Permian Basin's first Suboxone clinic of its kind has opened through the efforts of the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and Texas Tech Physicians of the Permian Basin. Suboxone therapy is an upgrade treatment to methadone used to assist those who want to overcome their addiction to opioids, whether prescription medicine or heroin, said TTUHSC physician Dr. Bobby Jane. There are only a couple of clinics that offer what the TTUHSC clinic offers for opioid users, Jane said, and most of them will accept only cash as a payment. He said the clinic, located at 2301 West Michigan Avenue, will accept insurance and charge minimal costs. We know there is a huge epidemic for use and misuse of opioids, Jane said. A lot of folks are dying because they are overdosing on these substances. Since 2000, this medication was approved to rapidly detox patients. They can stop cold turkey and they stop having withdrawal symptoms, which are extremely painful and very uncomfortable. Previously, it took them weeks or even months to get over it. He said it isn't difficult for people to get addicted to opioids. Some have just had a vehicle wreck or a major surgery, and they inadvertently became addicted to their medications. While the government is trying to limit access to opioids, there's a whole lot of people already addicted, James said. This method is a safe method, but in a sense, it's very similar in a way to opioids. It can be abused if not used properly. If used properly, it can be used to detoxify people who are addicted to opiates in a short period of time. Their agony and discomfort can be very limited to a short period of time. Suboxone is comprised of buprenorphine and naloxone. Mustafa Qureshi, a fourth-year psychiatric resident, said naloxone is what acts opposite to the use of opioids. The treatment begins with three sessions at the clinic to determine how strong a medication is needed for each patient. From there, the medication can be purchased at a pharmacy and be used as a take-home treatment, as any other medication would, Qureshi said. The clinic will conduct weekly follow-ups and eventually monthly follow-ups on the patient. Jane said this is a very lax method compared to methadone because it doesn't require a stringent evaluation process and patients can detox in the comfort of their own home. Methadone treatment requires patients to go to the clinic for each treatment and has a very lengthy evaluation process, he said. The Suboxone daily treatment could last from 1 year until the rest of the patient's life, Jane said. However, he said most patients won't be bothered by one injection a day, especially if they were already used to using 4 or 5 times each day. There has to be a strong desire to become clean, though, Jane said. Babak Akbarian, a third-year psychiatric resident, agreed and said most people won't mind putting in the efforts because they get their lives back doing so. Basically, anyone addicted to any type of opioid is losing life, Akbarian said. They begin to not be able to function. They put people at risk. They put their own lives at risk. But you can see people on Suboxone, even in their first few treatments, and they begin to get their lives back and become functioning again. They get their families back. They get their job back and get back to their normal lives. To them, it's just a matter of getting their life back, Akbarian said.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.